Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schwindiger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a lovely five-star review, which somebody did, and I totally appreciate. And follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
Really? That's awesome. Yes, it's sad that we're so shocked by that. Well, we're here to talk about some recent news headlines and hopefully provide some insight and analysis of practical application you can take back to the office to help protect your organization.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
Well, so Matt, do you think cyber war will be more satisfying than cyber sex?
I don't know, but I'm certain that it will last longer.
So the article we're going to be talking about today is Where Are the Serious Russian Cyber Attacks? And this is from the Register. And so since Russia invaded Ukraine, there's been this expectation because both Russia and Ukraine are well known for the skills of their I don't know if you want to call them cyber forces, but the technical acumen of
cyber
Russians and Ukrainians. There was an expectation there was going to be some kind of cyber battle or, you know, cyber war raged between Russia and Ukraine.
And this isn't the only article. We found like 8 articles that all basically have the same thing.
Right. So we have to put one in here, though, at the spot, at the top. So really, this one got lucky and was chosen. But if you see the show notes, there's going to be at least 6 or so, I think, in there that are going to be talking around this theme of where the Russian cyber attacks at. Because there's an expectation because I think really this is probably mostly around the whole NotPetya thing. I can't even remember what year that was. 2017?
I don't remember. 16?
I don't even remember. I think really that's where this is kind of stemming from, where people, because of that instance, are expecting the Russians to conduct cyber attacks against Ukraine in some kind of large way as part of their combat operation or this invasion. Now, that's not to say that they haven't done something. You know, Russia and its proxies have launched some distributed denial of service attacks against Ukrainian sites. There's been a couple of different pieces of disk wiping malware that were found in the Ukrainian government system.
There's been 3. Wiper, yeah, Hermetic Wiper.
Isaac Wiper. What? There's a third one?
Yeah, I saw three.
Oh, well, those are the only 2 that I'm aware of. But those 2 are actually in government systems and designed to just wipe the disks. But there really haven't been many of those. The articles that I read referenced hundreds of instances, which in the grand scheme of things is not that large of an attack. Now, the other thing, which it makes a bit more sense, but I'm really kind of on the fence of whether it does or not, is on the 24th of February, which is the same time Russia invaded, tens of thousands of KASAT SATCOM terminals stopped working in several countries. Ukraine, of course, Germany, Greece, Hungary, and Poland. KSAT provides, and what KSAT does, they provide residential broadband services. So I'm not sure exactly how this impacts Ukraine's ability to defend itself, but assuming that this was launched by the Russians, this is one instance that kind of may make sense if there's some kind of Ukrainian necessity for the internet services to conduct their warfare stuff.
Yeah, this one seemed a little weird to me, given that it seems to be mostly residential.
Yeah, well, what I read on it is it's exclusively residential. There was a tweet that was put out, and this is kind of weird also, put out by the French space commander, which is just funny to say, General Michael Friedland, that confirmed the attack. And it was in a video that someone tweeted. Maybe I'm misstating that he actually did the tweet, but in the video, he says that the terminals have been damaged and made inoperable and probably cannot be repaired.
Interesting.
So it's just interesting that that's the level of the attack, and it was issued by this French space commander. So I'm not sure exactly why they were particularly involved in this presidential thing, because it goes through.
It kind of makes sense because a lot of these, the SATCOM network you're talking about covers all of Europe.
Right. Yeah. Cause it does mention that the Irish get some feeds from this as well.
The article has a map of coverage, and like it's in Finland, it's in Ireland, it's in France, it's in Spain, it's all over the place. So yeah, pretty much this potentially could have affected all of Europe.
So what do you think that the government comms were piggybacking on the residential comms then?
You know, I mean, one of the things that you always talk about is having a backup method of communication. So it wouldn't surprise me maybe if that was what they were using as their backup communication. Or alternatively, it could have been for propaganda purposes. to make sure they're not getting, you know, the wrong propaganda.
Or any propaganda, because imagine what, you know, well, you know, if you think what the point of that was that Russia invades and mm-hmm. they attempt to keep all of the Ukrainian populace ignorant of the fact that the invasion is going on, because the Ukrainian government can't contact them for the most part to let them know the Russians have invaded.
Yeah.
So I guess that does kind of make more sense now that I think about it, think it through a little bit more.
Well, I mean, most modern combat includes jamming and stuff like that, you know, electronic warfare.
Right.
So again, maybe this was to prevent them from using regular email or their phones to make contact, because satellite internet makes a lot of sense for as a backup method of communication for maneuvering units.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very fast, but you don't need it to be very fast to send, you know, orders.
Yeah, I guess the question I would have then is exactly what percentage of the Ukrainian populace is consumed or is connected to the internet to the SATCOM network?
It's a good question.
Because tens of thousands sounds like a lot, but when you're talking about millions of people, you know, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be. Yeah, it has to have a military reason. No, but you're right. Even as a backup, like they can just connect their personal phones to the local Wi-Fi or use the local cellular network and get their orders in a backup method that way.
Yeah, not sure. But this is the one, you know, one instance where it kind of sounds like it makes military sense for them to do this because it happened to coincide with the invasion. But apparently what could happen was there was a misconfiguration of the management section of the SATCOM network, and that was used to knock the modems offline once it had been compromised. And there's a link into the show notes to a fellow that does a whole breakdown on this. He had given a speech at Black Hat a few years ago about SATCOM vulnerabilities. And he kind of lays out what he thinks may have happened. I'm not going to get into all the details here, but at least he thinks it's plausible that, you know, this happened through being a ground station in order to get into the network and then access the management section of the SATCOM network from there. And most likely that what had happened was the intent was to attack the SATCOMs for, you know, Ukraine, but there were spillover effects to other parts of Europe.
Mm. So it is interesting. Somebody from SOCOM that used to work for SOCOM said that the quote is traditional land-based radios only reach so far. If you're using modern smart systems, smart weapons, trying to do combined arms maneuvers, then you must rely on these satellites. And like the US and Russia and China probably have their own satellite constellations to work with, but a small country like Ukraine, they probably don't have their own. It makes sense they're piggybacking off an existing constellation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were using this one or if they're using another one, but...
Right. So those are the instances that we know of potential cyber activity, you know, from Russia's part attacking Ukraine so far. So the article is asking the question about, why is Ukraine's electrical system still up? Why is their television network still up? Why have Russia not knocked out all these digital means of communication or command and control? Yeah, and actually, I thought it was pretty funny. One of the reasons that was proposed in the article, which was that DHS, you know, prevented all this because they're awesome.
I have an alternate theory, but I'll wait for you to discuss the DHS one.
Because here's the quote from the article. It says, "Give credit where credit's due. It is because we knew cyber attacks were coming. January 18th, the U.S. Cyber Security and Infrastructure Security Agency warned critical infrastructure operators that they should take urgent near-term steps against cyber threats." And here's the list of items that were contained in that release, which is also a link to the show notes. And you'll see why it's so blatantly obvious that this is what possible cyber attacks. They said you should identify unexpected and unusual network behavior, enable logging, make sure your antivirus and malware software is installed and has signatures up to date. You test your backups. So you have an IR team and the personnel to support them in other parts of the business. You conduct tabletop exercises. If you're running command and control system, ensure you test your manual controls. And the final one, if you're working with Ukrainian organizations, take care to monitor and inspect and isolate traffic from those organizations. So obviously no IT organizations or security teams are doing any of these things till they just told them to do it. So that's why they were prevented from Russia taking them over.
So my alternate theory is that Russia thought that the war was going to be short and sweet, and they wanted to leave all of the systems up and running so they could just take them over.
I think that's really possible. I actually have another idea, which we'll get to here in a minute after we cover a couple other pieces, a little bit other ground. But that's plausible. I guess the question would be, you know, in that kind of scenario, that assumes that cyber war would lead to destruction versus inoperabilities.
No, and you're right, it may not. But for some things like the electrical system and the TV networks, they want those up so they can immediately broadcast the propaganda. You know, we've saved Ukraine, you know, demonstrate them triumphantly rolling into Kyiv. The electrical system, again, if they think they're going to immediately take it over, they don't want to mess with that. They want to have it up and running so they can have their air conditioning and heating. Versus the satellite internet, they didn't care about that. They shut that down permanently because they don't want Ukrainians to have access to the internet, and they don't want the Ukrainian military to have access to those comms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could certainly see that from the electrical grid perspective, because, if you know, at least if I were going to attack the electrical grid, what I would be thinking about is gene some piece of hardware or something.
Those that transformers they talk about that you can't replace very quickly.
Right. But the TV stations and stuff like that, I think that's less obvious because Ukraine and Russia are pretty close together. I think Russia could broadcast their own propaganda across the border if they wanted
That's
to.
Fair.
So I think it's less important for them to keep those things up. But with the electrical grid, I think that does make a bit of sense. Because that's one thing that's different from the Russian invasion of Ukraine versus the way America invades. I mean, because before America went into Iraq, I think the bombing campaign was, 30 days of...
Yeah, we knocked out all their infrastructure.
Yeah, destroying everything, you know, killed, I think, 6,000 people in the first month or something like that, civilians in the first month, whereas Russia rolling in is doing this much more slowly and methodically and doing less infrastructure damage overall, because you haven't seen, at least I have not heard about a lot of actual aerial bombardment of Ukrainian cities. There's, of course, some missiles going off that damage apartment buildings and hospitals and other things that have been indicated in there. But even so, those numbers seem to be that. The death tolls from those attacks seem to be down from what you would expect from the size of them anyway. But anyway, it seems like the Russians are overall being more restrained in their approach is what I'm trying to say. And I don't have, you know, I don't know what they're thinking exactly about why they are or seem to be anyway. But that kind of ties into maybe what you're thinking about. The reason that they haven't done the cyber attack is because their cyber efforts tie into their kinetic efforts, and they're both more measured, I guess. But something else that was mentioned in one of the articles is that Ukraine and its allies knew this was coming, and they had help from other technology companies. Specifically, Microsoft's Mystic team, which is their threat intelligence center, said that they detected offensive and destructive cyber attacks against Ukraine and immediately advised the Ukrainian government about the situation. Now, the article that I read didn't seem to indicate that. I guess it assumed that meant they were able to do something in time to prevent the attack from being destructive. I'm not sure. It doesn't really say specifically, and because we did that, this was the outcome. They just made an assumption based on that statement that it was effective. So I'm not sure about whether that's exactly accurate or not. And of course, Anonymous has loudly and vocally come out on the side of Ukraine and said that they've been attacking Russia back. Because Anonymous doesn't really do defense. They're more offense.
Yeah. And how would you even do that? Like, if someone from Anonymous showed up and was like, hey, I want to help you with your, like, you couldn't just let them in. They could be anybody. You don't know who they are. Could be the Russians coming knocking and being like, give me access to your stuff. I want to help you.
You mean they're anonymous?
It's so weird. So now, speaking of Anonymous, though, I've been following on that Twitter thread. Not Twitter thread, the Telegram channel. And every day they post new IP addresses. It's really interesting.
Anonymous is posting, or are you talking about the Ukrainian?
This is the IT army of Ukraine, but it's tangentially related. I'm sure there are a lot of, you know, anonymous people in here.
I guess what I'm asking is that being posted by the Ukrainian government, or is it just people that are part of the army that are posting these things?
You know, that's an excellent question. It's being posted by somebody named, hold on, who's posting it?
Because I think the channel is run or owned by the Ukrainian Technology Ministry or whatever, right?
Yeah, but it's a good point about who's actually posting this. It's supposedly the Ukrainian, and they're hitting Russian websites, but they're giving the Russian website And then they're giving an IP address, which may or may not. How many people are actually checking to see if these map to the actual Russian website?
So you've got Russians in there putting in their Russian names and then the Ukrainian website IPs?
Maybe. I mean, who knows what's going on here? Okay, so I just put one into Shodan. It does say Russian Federation, City of Moscow, Organization, Admin, VPS. Was that, hold on though, was that actually who? They said this was Belki.net. Just well, have a bunch of open ports.
Russia's been actually conducted an exercise where they cut themselves off from the rest of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, they might do something like that if they get too many denial of service attacks or whatever from outside of Russia. But one of the other things they mentioned in the article is that this is an assumption on their part, is that Russia has a cache of zero-day vulnerabilities, kind of like we assume the NSA is sitting on, that they could launch, but they're afraid that this would cause an escalation from the West. You know, if you attacked Ukraine with these new cyber weapons or attacked other Western assets with these cyber weapons, that could end up escalating. Which goes to another comment they made, which is kind of an interesting idea, which I'm not sure of, is the idea that they supposed that the concept of mutually assured destruction could be the same thing for the internet, and that you could initiate some kind of cyber attack that's so devastating that the retaliation would be also is equally devastating on your side, that both countries could be permanently but seriously damaged from the cyber attack. I mean, it seems to be a little bit fantastical for me.
I don't know. I thought it was an interesting idea. I don't know. Let's get back to that, the transformer argument. I mean, if I remember correctly, they said something like the transformers and all of our substations, electrical substations, are built to order, and there's not like a repository of those just hanging around, and you only have to destroy a couple of them.
So you think, I guess the assumption would be that you would have, but on that side though, taking out one substation, you know, I would not think is mutually assured destruction. You know, you'd have to take out about every power station in the whole country in order to do that. And I'm more skeptical that that is a plausible scenario. At least in the United States, it's not really plausible because of the disparate electrical systems that are throughout the country. You know, people talk about the American electrical grid, like it's one thing, but it's,
you know, three at least, yeah.
No, there's dozens of regional ones for different areas.
All right. Well, the article I'm reading right now says there's three grids and 55,000 substations.
In the United States?
Yeah. Yeah. They talk about how several sections of the grid go down at the same time. Oh, I have no doubt there's smaller regional ones, you know, owned by different companies.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all interconnected. They're talking about the Great Northeast Blackout in 2003, where if a couple of sections of the grid go down at the same time, it can cascade like dominoes. They found there's an article from CBS News about, wow, like a month ago, saying that the John Wellinghoff of FERC, whatever FERC is, said that you can knock out the entire grid by taking out 20 substations. Oh, they found the U.S. could suffer coast-to-coast blackout if they said less than 20, but this one said 9. That's not very many substations.
I'm sure those 9 are heavily protected then.
Yeah, that's the question. Is it 9 of any? Interesting. Russia's cyber attack on Ukraine's grid in 2015 knocked about 60 substations offline, leaving 230,000 people in the dark. Yeah, I guess the question is, are they knocking it out permanently? And how long does it have to be knocked out? I mean, what happens if they knock out the whole grid? And do they have to send people and start bringing them out one by one? That would be...
I would assume so. But what's interesting about what you just said, though, about, so they were able to knock 60 substations offline in Ukraine, which knocked out the electricity for
230,000. Yeah, 200,000 right? people.
So how many millions of people are in Ukraine?
44 million.
Okay. So it sounds like the Ukrainian infrastructure is more robust than the United States infrastructure then.
Well, again, all that 60, was
only hit 200,000. Well, there's 9 in the United States will take out the electricity for 350 million.
I'm sure it has to be like a selected 9. Like, I'm sure it's not just picking a random 9.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still skeptical about that. FERC is a government.
Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Yeah. So I think FERC, you know, they're incentivized by saying, hey, this is dangerous. You need to give us money to help protect against this. So I'm skeptical about claims like that, because that sounds like a really small number to me that would take out the entire United States.
Well, I'm sure there's like critical ones in certain places that others rely on, maybe. I don't know. But even still, like knocking out a big portion of electricity for a big part of the U.S. would be interesting, especially if it lasted for a couple of weeks.
Well, the thing is, you know, if Russia, let's say Russia did that, how are we getting away going to attack when all our cybers are down?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they'll have backups, but will the internet have backups? All the pipes?
Yeah. Well, maybe there'll be an American submarine near the Atlantic that will tap into the cross-Atlantic cable and, you know, launch cyber attacks from the sub.
Via what, ELF?
All right, so that's another theory. But the Washington Post had 11 reasons that they think why we have not seen these huge cyber attacks from Russia. So the first one we've already kind of talked about, just keep waiting. The good stuff is in reserve. So Russia's holding back on the capabilities for one reason or another.
I think that's almost certainly true.
Well, this is like you always hear about the NSA, you know, when they have information, or we assume they have information of a certain type, but they don't release it in order to further a different goal of the American government because they don't want to expose the fact that they have that capability.
Yeah, they're going to save it forever for something special.
Yeah, save it for a rainy day until it finally gets found and then patched, and then there goes your cyber weapon. It's like, yeah, man, I should have used that. Dang it. Now it's worthless. The next one is big hacks are happening, but we don't know it. Given the propaganda and rhetoric that's currently going on, I'm very skeptical if that's even possible. I'm pretty sure we would hear about it if there were huge hacks already going on.
Yeah, I'm certain we're hearing about attacks that never happened. So some that have.
Russian hackers weren't prepared for the invasion is another one.
Seems plausible given how much we've heard about how they thought it was going to be super short and super fast.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, what does that mean? They weren't ready. That mean they didn't do their recon or identify who their targets were, what vulnerabilities they were going to attack. I don't know. I'm skeptical about that one because I'm not sure the hackers really need a lot to prepare.
Yeah. It's not like they need to charge up their, you know, cyber attacks.
All right.
This hack only works if you let it sit for 3 weeks in the dark.
Yeah, it's like a fine wine. You've got to age it to sort of correct them out. All right, we'll come back to that. We'll skip this one and come back to it because I think that's the most plausible reason. Next one is major cyber attacks aren't that useful during a shooting war.
And I think they're adding a cyber attack, synchronizing attacks between the field of battle and cyber is probably a giant pain in the butt to do. So, you know, armies synchronize between, you know, groups of people all the time. So it's probably not that big a deal. The other question is, what types of cyber attacks would you do? Would you be doing like DDoS distractions? Because if you're not doing something that affects the army in the battle, I don't think you're really affecting the field of battle that much. Like if you DDoS all of Ukraine's government websites while you're sweeping in, you're not really changing the field of battle.
Right. You're not impacting the commander's ability on the ground to succeed at whatever their objective is.
Yeah. So I think that one's fairly plausible, that unless you're hitting the units that are there, I mean, there's been some examples of that in some books that I've read, which I know books are not reality, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But for example, there's a book in a series written by John Ringo where they hack the army and they scramble the order for where they're supposed to deploy. So rather than being deployed in a solid line with, you know, support units behind them and, you know, echelon to provide covering fire for the units next to them, et cetera, they end up kind of scattered with, you know, supply units out front and heavy, like direct fire units in the back. And nobody's got any units attached to their line, so they can all be easily surrounded and picked off piecemeal. Mm-hmm. So like that kind of attack would be really good. But of course, every army is anticipating exactly that kind of attack.
Yeah. That sounds like that's more of an attack where you got two armies facing each other on a regular battlefield, whereas this sounds to be more like guerrilla warfare or urban house-to-house stuff versus, you know, what you envision from like World War II, where you have the, you know, the Germans and the Americans on two sides of a battlefield. They're duking it out that way.
But that could actually be more useful there because you could just tell a couple of units, say, oh no, the Russians are breaking through here, 30 miles to the west. Quick, get over here.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, is that's not the type of battlefield we're dealing with, which is why it's not as useful.
Well, that way, if I still feel like that'd be useful in guerrilla warfare, because again, you could just pull out, you could just weaken your unit, your enemy locally. But again, maybe the Ukrainians anticipated this and are using a method that's not open to be hacking. I don't know, maybe they went to messenger boys.
Yep. All right, so the next one we're going to kind of talk about, SEAL escalating the cyber tensions in the West.
I think that one's slightly legitimate. I mean, they've got to kind of walk a fine line here in invading Ukraine. They don't want to, if they get too rowdy, then they're going to see other countries join in, other countries that might fear Russia taking them, you know, in 5 years or 10 years. And they'd rather just face it now and see if they can stop it now.
Yeah. And this is one of those fine examples of you can put cyber in front of anything.
Cyber tensions.
Cyber tension. Next one is Russia wants to keep you okay. What's that?
Nothing. I didn't realize this was coming.
Russia wants to keep Ukrainian infrastructure intact for future occupation, which, you know, this sounds really familiar, like I've heard this somewhere before.
Someone real smart said it a minute ago.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Another one is Ukrainian cyber defenses are working. You know, we've already covered
time.
That bit.
I have a hard time believing that's true.
Yeah. Next one, global cyber defenders have blunted the worst of the Russian packs.
Also, you know, cannot goes believe along that one.
With the first one.
Yeah, given how incompetent most attackers are. And they still get in.
Yep. I think the next one is kind of plausible, which is Russia's best hackers are busy spying. In other words, they've been their priorities are not invading Ukraine. Their priorities are something else.
No, that actually does make sense. Like they probably, like when you look at the way they're organized, the US and the CIA is organized around people tend to be specialties in something. It's possible that their best hackers are just kind of specialized in breaking into the US's systems or China's systems.
Right.
And they're busy trying to pull back maybe diplomatic related information stuff. So how are they responding to it? Are they sending them more stuff? And the Ukraine group is like the second stringers.
Yeah. So saying that you know, the Russian hacker priorities are not the Ukrainian war.
Yeah. They haven't really needed it.
And the next one is, which is kind of silly actually, is the Kremlin's hackers' hearts just aren't in the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe. They're sitting... They're, you know, you just imagine this in the United States, though. You've got, you know, your cyber attackers in the United States, and the commander is telling them, hey, I want you to go and compromise this box. And the guy's like, I just can't get in.
Just can't get in. Man, they have some tough defenses.
Man, I just can't get around this. I can't find any boxes to attack. It's just, I'm skeptical of that kind of thing where, their heart's just not in, so they can't do it.
And what's interesting, actually, is the part of the question here, too, is who are they targeting? Because a lot of the talk about the defenses, like if they're attacking commercial targets, that is almost certainly it's not the defenses. But if they're attacking military targets, that might actually be a legitimate, like having difficulty breaking in.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about the way that the Ukraine has their military command and control structure, but the United States, the U.S. government has classified networks that, you know, they run on the backbone of the public networks, but they are completely separate from the public network. So they're not easily attacked. So it might be that they're just, I mean, because of that, there's no point in doing cyber attacks because they aren't going to influence the battle at all.
Yeah.
But we'll circle back around to the one that I think is most likely, which is Russia didn't think the cyber attacks were necessary.
Yeah.
Because a cyber attack that actually, and I mentioned this a second ago, is that actually disrupt or impact military operations is really hard to do because of the likelihood that these are running on classified separate networks. So the cyber attacks, you know, if you took down the NSA's public facing website, that's not going to impact the NSA's ability to conduct any kind of operations or the Pentagon's public facing website. So that's kind of why some of the cyber army stuff seems like it's really more show than anything really useful. And part of the thing that the whole premise here on, well, we expect Russia to be launching these huge, you know, conduct cyber warfare is, I think too many people see this in like a movie plot kind of concept, including people in the government, not just the average people or the news media.
Yeah, there's a, interestingly, I just read an article in National Review this morning, weirdly, discussing how even though the many of the shows we watch, we know they're fiction, they still manage to worm their way into our brains. And he specifically was discussing how many people, many Americans, when they look back at the 50s and 60s, they have kind of this vision of the white picket fence in the suburban neighborhood. And that never really existed, or even suburbs, they existed for a certain percentage of people, but people still look back at it with nostalgia about how wonderful life was in the 50s, because they're remembering, you know, the sitcoms with the easily solved problems, and there was no abuse, there was no rape, there was no drug abuse, there was no divorces, there was no adultery. And it makes me wonder kind of how people are going to look back on this today. With all the, where the big thing now is like terrorist and war dramas. And anyway, it just makes me wonder how, like you're talking about people believing the movies, even if they know the movies they see are fiction, like it still kind of affects their thought process. And maybe they're thinking that, you know, all the stuff, like it's worming its way into their brain, that all these cyber attacks can do all these crazy things that don't actually happen.
Right. I mean, like, was it that shitty show Scorpion or... man, what was that terrible one with Patricia Arquette? My wife really liked that one.
Swordfish. And
actually, yeah. I like Swordfish, even though it's terrible from a technology perspective.
Let's think about the cyber attacks we're talking about. What's more valuable, that they flashily take down a couple of Ukrainian government websites, or that they sneakily work their way into the Ukrainian command and control channels and just watch what the orders are coming down so that they can reposition their forces to be most effective?
Right. But that's not as sexy as, you know, cyber warfare.
No, it's really not.
From the way that these guys are picturing it, which is why I think that, you know, the whole concept here is, you know, or the expectation here of the Russian cyber war is completely misplaced. You know, I was kind of thinking about this for, you know, and they're worried about, and this is something that you hear a lot about. Well, we expect Russia to attack the United States in a cyber manner any day now because of what's going on in Ukraine. You know, and when I'm thinking about that, I'm not sure that there's any upside for Russia if they do anything like that. You know, I like playing, you know, I like chess and pool and turn-based tactical games. I'm not good at any of them, but I enjoy playing them. But when you're playing those kind of, you know, when you do either playing pool or playing a tactical game or whatever, you take an action, and when you are planning to take that action, the thing you're asking yourself is, okay, if I do this, then what? You know, and I'm not seeing the then what from a Russian attack on the West, whether it be, you know, our infrastructure or our financial institutions or anything, even in retaliation for them taking them away from the SWIFT network or whatever. Like, if they were to do these attacks against the West, these cyber attacks against the West, then what? You know, what's the point? What do they get from it? You know, this thing about, oh, well, it's just an ego thing. It was like, that does not make any sense from a governmental perspective. They get no, there's no upside for that kind of attack. So I think it's just an overestimation about, you know, for a, I don't know about an overestimation per se, but a, it's kind of the movie villain concept of Russia and Putin, you know, thinking they're just going to do evil things because that's what evil people do. Rather than thinking, you know, he's a rational nation state actor, and he's going to do what's beneficial for his war effort to get the outcomes that he wants.
Right. Assuming people are telling him the right stuff too. So we've heard that may not be happening.
Well, even, let's assuming that maybe he needs them to tell him something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on what you think those things are. But on the flip side, you know, whereas Russia doesn't seem to be conducting much in the way of cyber attacks, Ukraine against Russia seems to be doing a whole lot more. And I think last week or the week before, we talked about the heck is the name of that organization in Ukraine?
The IT Army of Ukraine?
Yeah, well, that's from the Digital Transformation Office or something like that.
Yeah. I
forget what the name of it is. Ah, the Ministry of Digital Transformation. So they have recruited this IT army to attack Russia. And in addition to, you know, this is, if you look at the concept of information warfare, you know, cyber is just one aspect of overall information warfare. And Ukraine is conducting a much larger information warfare operation and not just the cyber portion of that. You know, if you look at all the information or or propaganda, if you will, from Ukraine in the West. They are creating a very deliberate picture of what's going on over there, where Russia hasn't really done that from their side. I think they're coming late to the game to the idea of actually doing this or conducting an information operation at the same time they're conducting the military operation.
Well, we talked about that a little bit. I think you suggested that we're not seeing the information operation is mostly for internal customers, not necessarily for external.
Yeah, well, Ukraine is doing it they're doing multiple fronts. So they have information operations that they're directing internally at Ukrainians, and they have a separate information operation that they're directing outwards towards the West in order to influence what the rest of NATO countries really and how they view what's going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that makes this easier for them as well is, they're conducting these information operations, but their information operations are actually being amplified by the West fully supporting those operations. They are conducting one and the West is helping them conduct one by producing the themes and the concepts and everything into their media without really being pushed by Ukraine to do so. So there's an amplification effect there. And we're talking about information operations or information warfare. There are generally five pillars of information warfare. EW, which we talked about with, if you could look at the COMSAT stuff, where you're blocking and jamming, that kind of stuff. Computer network operations, which includes cyber warfare. Psychological operations, which include civil affairs and public affairs, where the propaganda really resides at.
So on the propaganda thing, I saw something earlier today talking about how there's a Russian word that I'm going to mispronounce because I don't speak Russian, but it looks like vranyo, and it means in English telling a barefaced lie that you don't expect anyone to believe. And the person that was quoted in this article that I don't even remember where I saw it earlier was they were just saying this is sort of a cultural thing in Russia. It sounds like bullshitting kind of where, Americans will get together at a bar and tell each other lies about how wonderful they were, great things they do. So it does sound like something that Americans do too. We just don't have a special word for it. But they were saying that, stuff like how Putin has built his backstory, like, him riding the horse barefoot. The specific example they called out in the article was him walking out of the Black Sea carrying two like ancient amphora, like he just found them on his swim. And like the myth of Putin.
What are amphora?
They're jugs. They're like old Greek jugs that they would store olive oil in.
Oh, okay.
Learn a new thing every day.
I do.
So, but what's interesting,
I retain that.
So the person in this article was suggesting this is just part of Russian culture, but I'd argue it's kind of part of everybody's culture a little bit. And frankly, to me, it sounds like marketing. It sounds like the kind of random shit that random stuff that a marketer will tell you. They'll happily tell you, you ask, how does it handle this attack? And they're like, oh, we stopped that in its tracks. And he didn't consult anything. He just knew off the cuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, Goebbels said if you vranyo enough, people will believe it.
Well, this is kind of like we were talking about those dramas and stuff. Like you watch them and you know they're fake, but it still affects you just a little bit. So, mm-hmm.
I know I've had people reiterate scenes from movies to me as if they're historical fact.
Yeah,
which is always amusing.
And we've known executives that do this, that just constantly lie, and not necessarily like lie maliciously, but they talk about how they think it goes, and they don't know. So I always never know what to do when I'm on a call and an executive says like, oh, we do this and we do that. And like in my head, I'm going, that's not actually how that works, but I don't think he wants me to correct him.
Yeah. Well, executives tend to believe their own bullshit.
Yeah.
And the last two pillars of information warfare are the military deception, the inflatable tanks, and then OPSEC, which is the
concept of OPSEC. Tanks. Damn it. I'll send these back. All right.
And the last pillar is the operational security, OPSEC, which is really preventing the enemy from knowing what you're doing. So it seems like, Ukraine is more embracing the concept of information warfare and the cybers within it than Russia is, at least from our perspective.
which is really interesting given like all the talk about how good Russia was when they were affecting our elections and all the talk about, you know, those various buildings full of hackers and operational warfare specialists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, really disappointing performance.
Well, that could be because what you're talking about may be just information warfare. And you just believe in someone else's attack.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this a little bit the other day. Like, it's hard to know what to believe because every military has their own civil affairs and their own propaganda unit. And every military is only going to post the stuff that is correct for them. And depending on their local code of ethics, it may or may not be true. But at the very least, it's going to be a true thing that has been oriented to look as good as possible for that army.
Right. Yeah, I think, wasn't it Churchill that the first casualty in war is the truth?
Yeah.
So regardless of where you're getting your propaganda from, it's propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, didn't we, when we,
a grain of salt.
When we talked about this on Wednesday, I think you mentioned when you were in the military, they were forcing, like they said, you had to, you, when you did propaganda, it had to have a kernel of truth in it. It had to be like provably true, but you were still cherry picking a little bit.
Right. Well, in the earlier days of information operations, one of the hallmarks of it was do not lie, because you do not want to get caught in a lie. You could bend the truth, twist the truth, spin the truth, but don't outright issue something you know to be completely fabricated, because you didn't want to get caught in that. But I think what governments have learned in the last 20 years, you know, since I was doing that, was that it doesn't matter. They've more embraced Goebbels' concept of lie, lie big, lie often, and people will believe it, versus saying you do not want to get caught in a lie.
Yeah, that's when you see stuff. I see stuff like recently, they're like the maternity hospital was hit by the Russians and a mom and her baby were killed. And that might be correct. I mean, it's war. There's going to be, you know, shells and missiles flying everywhere. It's entirely possible that a maternity hospital. But what they're specifically trying to get out of you is they're trying to get out, you know, feelings of hate for the Russians and these monsters. They almost certainly didn't target a maternity hospital. That's a place that has no military value whatsoever. Nobody's going to just, you know, laughing maniacally send a couple million dollars worth of missiles into a maternity hospital.
It's kind of interesting that Ukraine would have an entire hospital for maternity. I don't think we do that over here.
It might have been a maternity ward.
We have maternity wards in hospitals. We don't have maternity hospitals where that's all they do there.
Speaking of information security and operation security, did you see the Reddit thread on Ukrainians using schools?
I did not.
Oh, so somebody supposedly, I have no idea how much this is true because we're, of course, talking about information security and propaganda. Supposedly, a Ukrainian soldier posted a picture of him and his compatriots inside of a school at Ukraine into a private Facebook group. Someone in that private Facebook group decided to post it to Reddit for internet clout. And supposedly, like 2 or 3 hours later, the Russians started shelling the schools.
The schools, because they didn't know which school these guys were in. So they just started shooting all of them.
Well, because what they were doing was they had pulled all the children out of the schools because it's a war, you know, nobody's going to school in the middle of a war. Right. And then they were using the school to hide their soldiers. And so once they're hiding their soldiers,
I mean, it sounds like it's a
valid target if it's holding soldiers.
Well, it's also guaranteed not to hurt anybody other than soldiers then, because no one needs
to. Well, the part that I was talking about was the information security part, where now that all these soldiers have their, you know, their social media.
Right. Yeah. When I was in the Army, a lot of the offices had posters, which were World War II propaganda posters targeting the military for OPSEC reasons. You know, they'd have an image of a boat that was sinking and it would say someone talked. You know, it's because it's the whole thing, loose lips sink ships, right?
Yep.
And this is before social media and iPhones and all that, and indicating that, you know, you had to be constantly aware of operational security to prevent that kind of stuff from happening. And it may be that, and it's kind of odd because it seemed like operational security now would be more important than ever because of social media and iPhones and everything like that, where you should really heavily train people on operational security now, because how easily you could make a misstep.
anyways, I just wasn't sure, like, did the Russians shell the schools because of this and then they released it as like a reason for it? Did it actually happen? I don't know. It's just either way, it's interesting as a look at, you know, either a failure in operational security or it's a parallel construction for why the Russians are shelling schools.
Yeah. Well, it seems odd that you'd want to waste ammunition showing someplace you didn't know was going to have an effect on hitting other soldiers.
Yeah.
Because there's no upside. Going back to what I mentioned before about the then what, you know, what's the upside to Russians killing Ukrainian school children?
Yeah. Yeah, especially if they want to stay there for the long haul.
Yeah, and they've mentioned before where they think, you know, Russian soldiers are not interested in doing this fight or in anything like that. Well, if they're not interested in doing that fight, they're certainly not interested or evil and want to kill school children.
Mm-hmm.
And just say the propaganda on both sides is thick and heavy. And just consider the source and what they're saying about whether it's reasonable or not, regardless of whether it's Russian or Ukrainian or Western.
Fair enough. So why does this matter? Because it's cool. It's because it's interesting. It's interesting to me for sure, as, you know, potentially the world's first cyber war, which frankly has been kind of a disappointment so far.
Yeah, it's more like Falkland Islands level cyber war.
Fair enough. But really, the big reason is watch for spillover. As we mentioned earlier, part of the reason that Russia may not be turning loose their full dogs of war or whatever is it's extremely hard to target on the internet. And that's really what you should be keeping. I mean, NotPetya started off as an attack on Ukraine and it hit the rest of the world. So,
right. Yeah. If you're going to release, you know, a virus or a worm, you know, it's like biological warfare. You can't control that once you let that genie out of the box.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you programmed it really well, I suppose you could. But if they don't like NotPetya, then it could seriously impact. I mean, NotPetya costs billions of dollars across the planet. Well, thankfully, we're not seeing that here.
Yet. All right. Well, that looks like that's all the articles we have for today. There was actually, we only really referenced one, but on the show notes, there'll be a whole bunch of them. Thank you for joining us. Follow us at Serengeti Zek on Twitter and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.